Welcome to Security Architecture Podcast, where we help cybersecurity professionals to stay ahead of the curve and ensure they are successful in their cybersecurity journey.
Hello, I'm Evgeny.
I'm Dimitri.
We have a pleasure today to talk to Sandra from Amund Cyber, and we really would like to know what you guys do, and please tell us about yourself and the company.
Thanks for having us. My name is Sandra Gianita. I manage the solution architecture team here at Mammoth Cyber, and the offering that we provide is basically a secure enterprise browser approach to remote access. And you know, the problem that we're trying to solve is that our founders actually were the primary developers for the VPN code at previous companies, Juniper and Palo Alto Networks. And when they set forth in developing the enterprise access browser, they really want to focus on identity-based access, zero trust access, least privilege access, but now compartmentalize in a browser. The end result is that better user experience, more data controls, and a lot more visibility as far as user activity with respect to access and also just general browser experience.
We are a podcast about architecture and really want to know about the architecture, how you guys architected, how you guys design, how the traffic flow is going. Can you please walk us through the design?
Yeah, you know, I think it's best kind of told in pictures here. And so if you don't mind, let me go ahead and share my screen. This is actually the use of our browser here. So I use it as an everyday use. The browser itself, it is based on Chromium. It is hardened. So a little bit about the architecture of our solution. There's actually two primary components. There is the SaaS component, and then there's the enterprise access browser itself. So from the SaaS components, this is where we manage the policies, the onboarding of the users, more importantly, the integrations as well. And so we do have full integrations with identity providers, but also with a lot of application providers as well. Now, as the admin onboards new users and their access policies, access is always enforced on a least privileged basis. And how that manifests itself is those access policies are actually pushed down to the Mammoth browser. So the Mammoth browser resides on the end users, and the ideal use cases that we're finding here are things like replacement for VDI or virtual desktops, also for onboarding contractors, because we do support integration with managed device providers to allow things like BYOD, conditional access, and so on. And so from top to bottom, our access is based on who needs access to what resources. And then on top of that, we're not just providing authorization. We are always in the line of traffic. And so we are able to enforce and also make visible as far as user activity once they're interacting with an application. And this is a wide list of applications, not just web, although web is our main focus, but we can control things like data access, which includes uploading files, downloading files, printing and copy. And we'll flag this risky behavior. You know, we'll get into some of the reporting later on in the podcast here. But in a nutshell, wherever your users need access to applications, and those applications can be within their own internal network and or the public cloud or SaaS and so on, we can provide a one-stop solution for access to the resources that the users need.
Can you elaborate a bit more about the idea of the browser? So we have a Chrome, Edge, Firefox. You guys build your own browser based on Chromium, correct? So can you explain the logic, the decision, why Chromium, why not something else, and how is the difference in Chrome itself?
Yeah, so you know the Chromium code is open source, but the primary browsers these days, including Chrome and Edge and Firefox and so on, they're using it as a platform. But what we've done is we've hardened it to a certain extent, but we've used that as a vehicle. The reason being is that when you onboard users to the applications, in most cases, what are they using for access these days? It's a browser, correct? You know, they may be using Chrome and Edge, but there's certain risks in using the off-the-shelf browsers where they may be at risk for things like cross-site scripting attack, identity harvesting, and so on, where in a hardened approach, we can actually mitigate some of those attacks out of the box, making it a more secure access. But now when we get into conversations with our customers about, they really want to tighten down access, you know, using an end-to-end secure approach. And this is where the agent or a secure browser really is becoming part of the conversations. And you pair that with the identity provider and then conditional access. Now the browser becomes a chain that closes the gap, you know, where the browser no longer becomes a vulnerability.
From architecture perspective, is there any remote component as well? Policy, or there's a remote browser, or it's everything local on people's device?
Yeah, you know, part of that question is the infrastructure and the forwarding and so on. And this is a common question that we get. So the actual enforcement, in other words, the policies and the enforcement, is pushed down to the browser. But as far as the data path itself, and this is one of the advantages that we can, you know, talk about compared to like a VPN. So for SaaS-based applications, you know, the benefit of pushing the policy base directly down to the browser is there's no hairpinning, right? And so the overall user experience, you know, is definitely improved. In the case of virtual desktop, very much improved. But in the case of internal access, in other words, if you have resources in your private network, we can actually facilitate and more or less automate the creation of the secure access tunnels from your cloud to our cloud. And that cloud, as far as the customer's network, can be on-prem in their data center internal, or it can be in a public cloud as well. And the benefit there is that with our approach to securing that last mile access is we don't require exposure of public IP addresses. We handle all of that for you. And so we're able to spin up access to internal networks within minutes with our infrastructure. But the end result there is for internal applications, it does get routed through our network. And then there are checking such as the session, the cookies, and also the permissions as well. And so it's end-to-end as far as our inspection. And just to throw in there, one of the common questions that we have, since we are a SaaS-based solution, is what certifications have you gone through? And we have gone through our SOC 2 certification.
Is this means that you have an on-prem component as well, if I want to connect back to my office, like a proxy?
Right. Yeah, it's not necessarily a proxy. It's just a VPN tunnel, right? But it's something that we manage for you on behalf of the customer. So it's basically a container. And once that container is launched, it has all the keying material to authenticate itself against a specific tenant. And it more or less, it's a callback function. And that callback function results in a secure tunnel. It is TLS 1.2 going back from the on-prem back to our cloud. And whenever a user is presented with their dashboard of applications, whether it's internal or external, we will determine the routing. In the case of an internal application, we will redirect that traffic to the Mammoth SaaS. And from there, based on the location of the resource or application they're trying to access, we will route it and forward it through the appropriate VPN tunnel that has been established for that specific customer. So there is something on-prem that's needed. It's not a proxy. It's basically just a lightweight Docker container. It could be in Kubernetes as well, but it's very much low maintenance. I mean, they can be deployed in pairs for resiliency, and they can be deployed in multiples as well for scaling.
Thank you for sharing the architecture. It's very interesting. It looks like you're providing the on-prem channel, which is quite unique. And can you tell us a little bit about the user experience comparing to a regular browser? I'm assuming there's a lot of functionality and features that you build on top of Chromium open source. Can it slow down the user browsing or impact in any way normal work with the browser?
That's a common question that comes up because the browser-based approach, it's a change in mindset, right, as far as how you're providing access. And so the common question is, what is the impact on the user? Our question is, or our response normally is the fact that users are using browsers now, and the fact that our code is based on the same code base, you know, that Chrome and Edge on. One, from the user perspective, the user experience is very much the same. You know, they can use things like extensions, you know, we can manage those securely on your behalf. But the only difference is that they have to log in, right? But that's part of the zero trust and least privilege access. Once we identify the users, then we can present them with a dashboard of the applications and resources, you know, that they're authorized and entitled to. But from that point, it's just point and click for the user. And then our goal, you know, from the customer experience side or user experience side was to make sure that security is not getting in the way. And one of the benefit of pushing down the policies again directly to the browser is that when a user is accessing a SaaS application, the enforcement of their access privileges and also their permissions, it happens at the source. In other words, the browser. So there's no more handprinting. There's no need to redirect to a SWG, although we are getting some integrations now where that may be needed. But for the most part, for SaaS-based access, it goes direct. And so you're taking advantage of the full bandwidth of your location. If you're at home, you have a gig link, you know, you're no longer constrained by hairpinning and going to a centralized location. And then that may be a bottleneck for you. In this case, you're able to take advantage of your home network, and then the user experience is going to be very much the same. for access to the internal networks, again, regardless of whether they're on-prem or in your private or public cloud, that is actually obfuscated from the user itself. In other words, they don't have to toggle between multiple agents. For example, we've heard where customers have to manage, you know, one or two or three agents, you know, depending on the applications and the infrastructure that they access. In our case, you know, we tag the resources, whether or not they're internal and external. And so we remove some of those frictions and needs for the end users to toggle back and forth from one client to the other, you know, depending on the application that they're trying to access.
You mentioned the integrations with SWG. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? If there is an SWG component in the company, how would you integrate? Would it affect the experience? Would it affect the capabilities of the browser?
Not necessarily affect the capabilities, but you know, we certainly understand that the SWGs can provide other functionality that are meeting additional security requirements, right? And so our goal was to solve secure access problems, you know, that are not generally the best fit for things like an SWG, like for contractor BYOD, and then for VDI access. But we also realized that there are existing infrastructures in place. And so with our partners, we are able to detect whether or not the user is connected to the internal network or outside of their network. And based on those type of conditions, it's a browser. You know, we can implement things like pack files to redirect to like a SWG, where there may be additional filtering that's happening on that SWG or additional checks and balances and so on. So for us, it's more or less, how do we add our solution to increase the security posture of your existing network, right? But in those cases, some of the stories have to be that we have to integrate with the other security stacks that are already in place. And then the last topic there is, does it interfere with the browser experience? Not necessarily. From what we found is that once the user is presented with their dashboard internally, for example, for customers that do want to implement, you know, zero trust access, it's actually beneficial to them, but the end result there, as far as the user experience, it hasn't been degraded significantly. And the overall feedback we've had is that it's been a little bit better, if not the same.
Interesting. How about capabilities of SSC framework like CASB DLP?
Yeah, our goal was, especially for SSC and the CASB, was to be very much complementary. And so, you know, with CASB, it offers very in-depth DLP or data leak prevention capabilities. But one of the limitations is that it can't, you know, provide those controls on a global basis, right? And so this is where the browser can actually be used to complement, you know, a data governance policy or initiative within an organization, in the sense that regardless of application, we don't need specific integrations with an application like a CASB does. So the fact that we are able to control the browser and limit access to specific applications, but also we can also help customers kind of govern data access by across the board for web-based applications and also others like SSH. And RDP, which has become a very strong talking point for us, is the fact that we can control uploads, downloads, risky behavior, print, copy, and so on. This becomes very complementary for us, where now we do fill a niche in that C stack. And one of the common talking points these days is ChatGPT, right? The question of, do you know where your users are leaking data to? You know, once we go into some of the other demos and reports, I'll show you how we can actually help customers not only make visible those type of risky behaviors that may not be available to current CASB solutions because they don't have integrations with them, but we can also control those risky behaviors as well.
Thank you. I want to go a bit deeper on the isolation part, because we also want to prevent people to potentially get infected when they're going to dangerous websites. So can you tell us more about what you guys actually do? Because I'm guessing every tab is isolated. And also, do you isolate all the traffic or maybe only the dangerous websites?
Yeah, so within the browser itself, so each rendering process, if you want to get technical there, it's actually executed in its own sandbox. Now, within our sandbox, what we're doing is we're making sure that one process does not affect the other, but also from a security perspective, you know, isolating processes internally, you know, as a user goes from website A to website B, that isolation also prevents things like information harvesting. Just think of a cross-site scripting attack that may happen or executed on a personal attack, and then they will exploit the browser's behavior of maintaining a shared memory space. In our case, since we're rendering the application traffic in different memory spaces, we're able to prevent and mitigate things like information harvesting. Now, when we talk about sandbox, are we looking for things like malicious code and so on? In those cases, we're not. And this is where we have to partner up with our EDR and also the SWG, where they're adding that capability of looking for like malware. In our case, you know, we are looking or we are protecting against certain malware, but we're certainly not a replacement for EDR. Our goal was to complement some of the blind spots where EDR has, and those blind spots are within browser processing. You know, they really don't have full visibility as far as what's happening from all the scripts and so on that are being rendered by the browser.
Can we use the solution to isolate internal web-based resources? And how does it support legacy web applications that might require Explorer 11?
With our solution, where we're tightly integrated with the identity provider, access is always based on the user's role and the group affiliation, and then that will determine their entitlements. And so when the user logs in, you know, per zero trust and least privilege access, they will only have access to the resources that have been entitled, you know, for their group, their role, and so on. Additionally, depending on the architecture of the customer's network, for example, and going back to the architecture here of our VPNs that we establish, we can actually isolate based on the context of the user, their group, the application they need access to, but now in our case, also based on the location of that resource as well. So that can be factored into that context of how do we limit access? So one example that we can talk with, that I can talk about, is one of our customers, in the sense that they're actually have tech stacks in their autonomous vehicles, and we're able to isolate the direct access to the autonomous vehicles by way of our what we call our service edges. And so, for example, for a user, when they logged in, they will only have access to specific service edges and the applications and so on. So that's another level of security that we can provide. In this case, only certain developers actually have a pipeline to access, you know, these specific applications, which are located in this private network connected via service edge one, for example.
Many people right now, including me and Dimitri, and I'm sure you as well, using the browser to edit documents, Google Documents, Office 5 documents. With your browser, is the experience changing? What's going on there? Can I download a document? Can I upload a document? Would I feel any difference when I'm actually working on documents?
When actually working on documents, no. And this is where we talk about enablement. We want to give users full access to the applications that they need access to. And if they need to modify like a spreadsheet or add an entry in like Salesforce and so on, you know, those type of actions we don't want to get in the way of. Where customers are using our solution is in kind of a governance type access, in the sense that they realize that risky behavior of downloading data, maybe copying data from one application to the other, is considered risky data as well. And so our goal is not to interfere with the users, but also to allow IT security admins to provide governance controls to prevent things like data downloads or file downloads, you know, across the board based on role in the applications or application groups, and also to enable based on your role. For example, if you're a system admin, you may need those capabilities to upload and download. And so that context of how our policies are configured is part of that, is part of the answer of, you know, how do we help customers manage access to their applications, yet reduce their risks of data theft, and also prevent things like account hijacking with our identity protection mechanisms.
So you can install the browser on any BYOD device. How about mobile phones?
That's coming up end of the year. Our main focus has been on desktops. You know, we do have support for Windows and Mac as well, and those can be distributed via package managers like Jamf and SCCM. And we have had requests for mobile devices, but in our initial use cases, as far as our customers, we launched the solution about 2 years ago. A lot of our access have been from developers, they need access to tools like SSH and web-based access, and also for RDP. And so our focus has primarily been on just desktop access. But we do realize now that a lot of customers need mobile access. And this is coming from the fact that as we're establishing our solution within our customer base, we're starting to expand horizontally. And then that means different requirements for different teams. And you know, one of those requirements is access via mobile apps, but that is coming by the end of the year.
As part of the work, we also do a lot of browsing when we have certain extensions. It could be extension for a password, extensions for Zoom, and many other different things. How would you support extensions, and do you provide any configuration on security on what this extension can do?
Yeah, we're actually taking two approaches to that, and this is a new feature that was recently added. So we are taking the approach where the admin can manage and push down the applications from the management console, in other words, from the SaaS, and that will be rolled into a policy. So the workflow will be the administrator can log into the admin console. They can select which extensions they want to push down to the browser itself, again, based on the user's role. But at the same time, on the other side, we do realize that customers or that end users may have installed extensions on their own as well. And just as a backstory, we do fully support extensions from both the Chrome store and the Edge store. But as users install the extensions, we will also take an inventory and we will make visible to the administrator based on the users, what is my inventory of extensions, you know, in my organization. This is part of kind of the asset inventory story that we can help manage, because now the browser, the identities, and now part of that is going to be the extensions that are installed on the browsers. Those are assets that need to be made aware of, because there are certain risks with installing certain extensions as well.
It's interesting. There are some extensions that are malicious or potentially malicious, and they're getting a lot of access into the browser. Now, I understand that you can address it by policy and saying, okay, you can only get extension ABC, but let's assume that there's no such policy. Would you be able to prevent a malicious extension to be installed on the browser?
Yeah, those controls are actually kind of evolving for us, but short term, we're focusing more on inventory and awareness. Long term, as far as our control mechanisms, that is definitely on a short term roadmap. And part of that story is how do you flag malicious extensions, right? And what we're working on the back end is to be able to tag and score and make sure that any risky extensions, for example, if there have been, you know, recent exploitations of an extension, you know, are flagged as well. So in the inventory package, you know, that we can show the administrators as far as what extensions are in their inventory, we'll also be able to flag, you know, specific risky extensions as well. But that feature is coming. It's also going to be, to a certain extent, with our partnership and integrations with the mobile device management solutions as well.
So now, we are getting to our last question, and this is more around the organizational visibility and how you can report of attacks or risks that were prevented by the technology. We can see in your diagram that there is some connection to the SIEM or SOAR. Very interesting to see how this ties into all of this picture.
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, with security in organizations, small, medium, and large, it's an ecosystem, right? And so part of that is going to be, how do we enrich the existing reporting and alerting and so on? And so we have existing integrations with Syslog. Splunk is one that we've fully tested with, but as long as it's a syslog-based system, we can forward logs. Also with the IBM system and also with the Microsoft CentOS, which we're seeing more and more usage of. So going back to, you know, how do we help security teams manage risk and identify risk? Let's take a look at our identity tracker, which we feel is very much unique here. With our identity tracker, we're taking the approach that identities are corporate assets, and the exposure that we're making visible here is the fact that, where are your corporate identities being used? In other words, we're creating an inventory of your corporate identities and the applications on the internet where they're being applied to. And then after that is, how do we help you manage risk? And this is where our detailed reporting of not just showing that a user accessed this application, but we're also showing what identity they used to log in. And then more importantly here is, we're actually showing their data activity here. I'm just going to go ahead and just click on this link here. And just to measure the link as an example here, what we're seeing is this user, they use this identity to log in to HubSpot. They downloaded some files. We'll actually show you the file name here in the logs. And then not too long after that, we actually saw that same user. They uploaded a file to their Box account here. And so this is where we talk about, you know, how do we use that identity-based focus to give you an inventory of your assets, in other words, your identities, and what are the risks, but not just risks based on the application, but also since the browser gives us this ability, is what are your users doing when they're within that application? And this is where the very detailed logging that we provide is managing risk and very much focused on data theft risk. And so this context of the user, what application, and then what identity, and now, you know, not only did they download something, but what file, you know, did they upload or download, or did they copy something from HubSpot and then paste it into like OpenAPI? And so this is an example of where, you know, we're able to provide this idea of not only visibility as far as, you know, where your assets are, in this case, the corporate identities, but also what are the risks associated with where those assets are being used in.
Interesting. So this is kind of activity tracker for every user that uses the corporate identity asset and also the corporate web-based applications.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there a way to create reports here as well, like monthly reports or metrics to help the company understand how the tool performs?
Yeah, you know what? We do have the export of this data, but our customers actually prefer to have this exported into their SIEM. And so this information can actually be exported into their SIEM as well. But we can provide summarized reports, like, for example, what are the accounts that were discovered? You know, what are the apps? And so we do some summarization based on time frame. And then what are the identities that were used? And then what are the applications? But also we have other information such as risk information. Are these users using shared accounts? And we'll even go to the extent of if my user, in other words, if I had left the company and my user was disabled, we'll also flag that combination of my account is no longer active in the system. But at some point, you know, during my tenure at this company, I had access to the shared account. And so this is something that the administrators certainly should be aware of, because if it's a business use application, then me as a user, if I'm no longer with the company, I potentially still have access to those credentials.
Is there any concerns of privacy here? Because user might be using his own credentials and identity to log into certain publicly available websites.
Yeah, so we're not doing things like logging their passwords in terms of privacy. But the feedback we've had is that if they're accessing these resources via a corporate laptop, for example, that is a corporate asset. And so that idea of privacy is definitely a point that has to be regulated to a certain extent. And so this is where we can also work with the existing infrastructure. It could be a CASB or an SWG, just to limit the exposure of any private information. But you know what we're not doing, again, is we're not exposing things like passwords. We're just focused on the identity. And we're not exposing any of the private information in the files that they may be downloading. We're just focusing on what is that file name. Now, we do have partnerships that are coming up with extensions that could look for that information, but that is going to be a corporate initiative. But going or looking kind of broader here, in the sense that now the browser itself is becoming a platform, right? And then the integration point is with these extensions. But with that said, as far as the privacy concerns, what we're helping just to manage that in an organization to fit into their ecosystem.
You mentioned that the laptop is a property of the enterprise of the corporate, but most of the use cases are BYOD, right? For this case. So probably the guideline here, or something that we can take away from discussion, is that if you are using enterprise browser, try to make sure that you can blocking maybe access to privacy related websites which are not corporate applications or corporate sources.
Yeah, and this goes back to another point of auditing as well. So for BYOD, if a user is overextending their permissions, like for example, their access was a bit broader than expected, we can actually make visible those actions. So for example, if a user was given access to HubSpot as a contractor, but they should not have been downloading this type of data, right? And so this is where this can be used. In other words, we're auditing, making sure that the permissions that have been assigned to the contractors, whether using their device or a corporate, are in line with corporate policies. In other words, are their policies and permissions right-sized for their role? We're refining managing permissions and access within even a small organization, but even more so within large organizations. It's very difficult, right? Because that granularity of number of users, number of applications, and then what permissions those users need is difficult, right? And so this can be used to provide IT security admins that auditing feature to measure and determine which users may have permissions that are too broad for their role.
Or detect shadow IT.
Or detect shadow IT. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as we move kind of laterally internally with our customers, this is becoming more relevant. And so this is why we like to talk about this, because again, it's shadow IT, if you categorize it there, it's something that's unknown, right? And so our goal is, since we can make visible those actions, you know, we can quickly turn around and help the customers sanction those applications, right? Because this link goes directly back to our policy engine, right? Where now, if it is a business use case, then just sanction that application, enable SSO, integrate with your identity provider, make sure that the security best practice such as MFA is enabled, and so on. So we do have that single click workflow built into the reporting as well.
Let's say that I have a user that we identify that he's continuously uploading documents to a source that he's not supposed to have access to. Is there a way to respond and stop that once we detect such activity?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. And this goes back to some of the platform architecture and the capabilities and focus of our founders as well. They came from the networking space, but also the SaaS space as well. And so API integrations is key. And so with our system, we do provide an API key for our customers. And what they can do is, if you find that a user here, I'm just going to search for a user. If you find that a user here, for example, may have been over-permissioned, we have one example that we can talk to where we're sending this information as far as a user downloading excessively that we alerted on to a SIM or even a PAM solution like a SailPoint. Now, based on their analysis, they can actually send that to an ITSM like a ServiceNow. And then ServiceNow can actually send an API call. And we have the API calls formatted to, for example, move me to a different group that is more restricted. And or if I'm added to a policy just by my name, then just remove those specific permissions for my user account here. And so those workflow automations to detect and then react quickly, we already have the APIs in place to facilitate that automation.
Thank you.
Sandro, very much. Very, very interesting. It looks like you guys developed quite a lot of good features. So thank you for coming today and showing the solution.
No, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone's listening. Please don't forget to check with Kiko episode as well. And Sandro, thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.